Good morning. Welcome to Inside Petaluma.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Jenny Thomas, co-hosting with Jason Davies and Janice Peter Thompson. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday to you. It's a funky Friday. Yes, it is. It's a wet Friday.
I just like this little music.
I
just
like
the funk stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to funk you up.
Funk is a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
I love to funk. As long as I don't get funked.
Okay, we get that about as far as we
can. Yeah, exactly.
Further, but we won't.
Yeah, right.
Someone once told me, it's like some people push the envelope. You're on the outside of the envelope trying to figure out a way back in.
Yeah.
I don't know if that works.
My kids gave me the Native American name of running with scissors.
Oh, that's a good one. pointed which way?
And then I cover outside the lines.
There you go.
Yeah. My kids are a lot more conservative than I am, and it just, I can't believe it in so many ways.
They rebel.
Politically, they're not conservative, but in their thoughts, you know, in their they're good critical thinkers.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing.
All right.
They teach me something every day.
So,
we have a guest.
Yes, we do.
We have a guest. Does somebody else want to introduce a guest today? I always do that.
We have Delinda Fisher from the City Council.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. So,
you had a busy week, didn't you, Delinda?
I'm still having a busy week, yes.
Did you realize how much work it was once you became a city council member, how much work it is at the front of people and in the background and just all the different items that you have to understand and know, and you have a good start with your background?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I didn't actually take time to think about what the job actually was.
Smart.
I knew I wanted it. But nobody gave me a roadmap once I got there, and so I've been feeling my way. And you know, it's a matter of how much time I put into it, right?
Yeah.
And how much time I really
yeah.
choose to do that.
Yeah.
And I think to really make a difference and
yeah,
to be prepared, you know, I must put in.
Yeah.
Like this week has been a great deal of time, and I'm struggling a little bit with my other obligations, but really happy to be here. Thanks
great.
For having me.
Yeah, you do your little orientation when you run, but that's. That's not really what what happens.
It's not necessarily
what's happening. We have to push the button. That's about it.
Exactly. Well, there was you did a quote the other day in the newspaper, and I really appreciated it. And it says, "I don't think this is the appropriate place for a gas station, and I don't think that we should be putting gas stations in our town.
Yeah.
I want our zoning code to change and the general plan to change so that uses like this that are so yesterday do not continue to happen." And I think it was a powerful quote. And that kind of goes into this Saturday. The city council is going to have their goal sessions for 2019 to 2021.
We should remind listeners the context of the quote. This is in reference to the city council meeting that was on Monday where the Safeway gas station was essentially approved to move forward.
Yeah, the appeal was denied from the Planning Commission, and so we upheld the Planning Commission's decision, and that was what I said, apparently, after I voted.
Yes.
So,
a good statement.
Yeah, I thought it was a really great statement.
Yeah,
and a true statement.
I have a question, though. What would have happened if the Planning Commission had decided not to approve it? That would have been a legal challenge as well, right?
It would have been appealed to us by Safeway, presumably, yeah.
And then
but
we'd be in the same state.
Right.
And if we had had the moratorium go through that Healy talked about, same thing would have happened. There were
I
can't conjecture. I'm not
I'm questioning that, too.
Well, that's what the article suggested, that Safeway was ready to go after the city legally for doing that.
And the reason for my quote is that, you know, this gas fueling stations right now are allowed by right, essentially, in our C2 zones.
Yeah.
So this can continue.
Yeah.
We can have other uses like this come before us. And so the real question is, as a city, what is our vision for the future? What do we want to look like? You know, how are we going to grow and develop? And are we going to continue to have gas stations on our corners? Is that what we want to continue to see? Because that is how our rules and laws are written. And the only thing, the real powerful thing we have are legislative tools. Mm-hmm. And that is what's called our zoning ordinance,
yes.
which implements essentially the standards of the general plan. And we haven't updated our general plan now in over 10 years. And I would suggest that given the way that our society is changing so rapidly, that to update your general plan every 20 years of a city our size is too long.
Yeah. It's way too
long. And so I am going to advocate tomorrow that we start now and take this momentum and this passion that this community seems to have and a desire for change and look at all of the aspects of our general plan, but really starting with development and, and starting so that we can get a head start on the zoning code and look at, you know, what sorts of things do we need to change to be able to implement this vision that we have. And more importantly, what is this collective vision? You know, it's not just mine, it's everybody's.
Yeah.
And so that is what tomorrow is about. Is having an opportunity to hear from everybody and say, you know, what are we going to look like? What do we want to be? And when I was running, I said, you know, there is no reason why we can't be a model city. You know, we have all of the trappings and all of the framework to be a leader in this community, in this county, in you know, we're in the state of California, in Sonoma County, 60,000 people in this beautiful setting. You know, with all of these resources and all of and our fabulous population, and you know, we should be able to harness that and really be out front and be a place that is really innovative.
Absolutely. So if we're going to talk about the general plan, because I really do believe the general plan needs to be not just updated, but actually we need a new general plan.
Re-envisioned, I would call
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And same with the zoning. So in the meantime, what does the city do when you're going through that process and all of a sudden project starts coming through? Is there a way to make sure that we're not going in the same direction that we've been going in?
Well, I, if your question is sort of what is the stopgap,
that's right.
You know, because of the McCorkle decision, which is sort of what backed us into the corner we were in on Monday, partly, I guess. You know, I think there's a fallacy about EIRs, and an environmental impact report really just gives decision makers the data to be certain that whatever project is coming forward, that you are able, you know what the impacts are going to be, you know what the negative environmental impacts are going to be, and that it suggests mitigations for those impacts. And that's what we did not have on Monday.
Yeah.
We had conflicting studies in terms of the health impacts, and so we didn't have any third party, basically, which is what an EIR, you know, those studies are done by impartial groups. And so we did not have that information to say, you know, are there any negative impacts that are health concerns? And we believe there are.
Yeah.
And how do we mitigate those? And so when you look at what came forward, you know, there, while there were impact fees, there were actually very few mitigations.
Yeah.
You know, the project did morph along the way, and the planning department required them to make a number of changes so that by the time it got to the planning commission, it was a much better project than what it was when it first came to the city. But in terms of your question, so it's a part of this process in the McCorkle decision, knowing that we have very little environmental review that we can require for projects that only have to go through our SPAR review or architectural review, like a gas station in the C2 zone, that we need to very quickly, and we've asked the planning department to take a look at, you know, what are some other uses like this that are allowed by right, essentially. And are there things that we need to sort of put a stop to right now? Or, you know, so
forward.
While we go through this process, you know, are there some things that that are going to sort of back us into the same corner. And, you know, can we do something immediately, like even just require a conditional use permit for some of these uses, which may not be ultimately. I mean, that's been part of the discussion, is having gas stations be allowed with a conditional use permit. And I'm standing here saying they should not be allowed at all. Again, if we look at the infrastructure that we want to be putting in for the future, and if we're going to be less dependent on fossil fuels, then, you know, what, again, how do we implement that? Is what does that look like? And, you know, I'm not sure if I'm standing alone or if I'm standing in solidarity. I know that there's going to be a group coming tomorrow at 8 a.m. for a rally. And that they've requested that we essentially adopt an emergency ordinance in regard to climate. So
that's a great plan to do that. And, you know, when we interviewed Teresa Barrett, she actually cited as the most important issue our community faces as climate change. So I know my sense is that she's with you on that.
Yeah, and I would suggest that as a species, it is our most important. And I would like to look at it as sort of a challenge and an opportunity, right? This is not about scarcity or about, it's about adopting and changing and modifying our behaviors and things like, you know, creating more robust public transit systems, you know, expanding our downtown so that people can live and work in one place, you know, sequestering carbon. The biggest thing for me is, you know, we're spewing all this carbon in the air, and we could all drive electric cars and we could all change our behaviors, and we're still going to have a lot of carbon in the air. And so for me, and the work that I do outside of being a council member, is how do we sequester carbon? Yeah. You know, what are the opportunities that we have? Because when you're sequestering carbon, you're taking care of the soil and you're taking care of the ecology of your place. And that has all sorts of external benefits, right? Planting trees, you provide shade, you provide habitat, it changes the climate on the ground. You know, there are... So I think even though we're a built-out, you think of ourselves as a city and being sort of built out, you know, when you look around you and you look at all the places that you could plant a tree, you know, I'm ready to start a tree brigade. You know, let's just go rogue plant trees.
As long as they're drought tolerant.
Somebody has to take care of them for the first year, and then, and as a matter of fact, and you know, because
can't have redwoods everywhere,
right? But if you've got tap roots going down into the aquifers, and we are taking care of being able to, you know, because part of sequestering carbon in the soil, also you're creating the soil life, and you're holding more water. It becomes a sponge, and so no, you don't need to have drought tolerant plants because they're living in this environment that's much more moist. And so while you do need to take care of them the first year, the fact is that they can take Mother Nature
can take care of them
after the first year.
Well, I'm talking about trees.
No, I get that. But you also have to work with the city council.
True.
And so where do you think that the city council would be on this? Because you have a larger community, and you can see by how divided this community can be. Mm-hmm. And if you're just going to be working on climate change as the most important, how are other people going to fit into this and understand it and accept it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it takes a city council education, but it takes a city council to also come together to agree that this is a direction that the city will be going. It seems like we need to really have a county issue, because we do have people of climate change in the county. Are we going to be working with them? Because we certainly don't need to reinvent the wheel. We need to bring other people in so we make sure the entire county is into this.
Well,
and I want to...
We didn't adopt Climate Action 2020.
I know.
Realize
that.
So this is countywide already.
Right.
It's just that we've not been doing much about it. You know, I think we sort of got complacent.
Well, I just want to bring up when we're talking about EIRs, and I think it's so important, because I'll go back to the Deer Creek EIR. The EIRs on sound and pollution, I assure you, they went through an EIR, and I do not believe they were correct. I think the sound level is 100 times higher. I believe the pollution is a lot higher than what these documents said. So always relying on an EIR is of concern with me, because the only way to measure that is for the city to go back today
monitor it.
And if we're not monitoring it, then what?
Yeah. Well, I would suggest that we want to envision a city where EIRs are not required because we have projects and proposals and zoning.
And I agree with that.
And a vision that are for projects that don't have traffic right. impacts, right. that don't have noise impacts, that don't have pollution. Those are the types of developments that I want to see come forward. You know, we've been relying on this sort of suburban model, and yes, a suburban retail center, while it does bring in tax revenue, does create all of these external issues, as well as having, you know, tons of paving on the ground for single-family cars. And so, again, what is this vision, and what is the paradigm, and where do we want to go? And I would suggest that if a project is going to have those sorts of impacts, that I don't personally want it in my city.
But when you have a majority vote, mm-hmm. and this is the direction they go, and there is no stopgap to say, okay, in 5 years or 4 years, once the project is up and going, we want to see how much revenue they brought in. Yeah. And we also want to see if the impacts that were mitigated with the EIR are true. And I say that with the Safeway project as much as I say with Regency and Deer Creek. And that is not something that this city does today. And if they did that, that's where you're going to get a lot of information and start going back and saying, well, mm-hmm. maybe it's the city that needs to say, this is what the direction that we want to go. And these are the numbers that we want to see, and not let an EIR dictate. And I agree with you. It's really the value of the city instead of depending on an EIR. But you have to have that data. And we have two shopping centers that we can actually get that data from. And I mm-hmm. will, I almost guarantee that you will find that the numbers are going to be very different than
what
the EIR said.
A lot of vacancies still at Deer Creek.
And the other thing is vacancies at Deer Creek and also vacancies mm-hmm. at Regency. And the yeah. other thing is, Deer Creek is looking putting apartments at 3 stories. Those need to be at least 5 stories. And I've talked to the developer about that, and they're saying, well, it doesn't pencil out. Mm. The city has to create the direction. This is what we want. And we want to go 5 stories. We want to make it a community.
I mean, unfortunately, that should have been part of the process in the beginning, but the council majority...
The council majority dictated it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Kind of went with the developer
on
that.
Can I just bring up... I just want to bring up one thing on mitigations. The most disappointing thing for me about the Safeway is I met with people from No Gas Here early on, and I talked about mitigations. I'll help you with a list. At least get the mitigations in there, because if the mitigations are there, and if they presented it, I think the city council would have actually put those mitigations in instead of on the last day you weren't able to put any mitigation in, and they did not put one mitigation in. I put mitigations in, but I apparently didn't have the clout for anybody to look at those mitigations and say, boy, let's at least add those in, and they weren't put in.
So,
disappointing.
So here's here's the issue with mitigation and the McCorkle case and environmental impacts, yeah. right? So if a project is allowed essentially by right, that's yeah. in quotations, my little fingers are going up here, and you're only looking at architectural review, then legally you can only mitigate right. impacts that have to do with architectural review, yeah. or in the case of our SPAR ordinance, and I wish I knew what that stood for, site plan
Architectural review.
Thank you. steep learning curve for
that
this one here.
That came out a long time ago.
Under yeah. the SPAR, under our SPAR ordinance, that there are, I think 7 different areas that we can look at, and most of them have to do with architectural review, design issues, but there also is ingress, egress, and how movement happens on the site, which is what I was trying to get at with my line of questioning for the Safeway developer, because that area was the only place that we had any teeth that didn't have to do with architectural review. So you can only ask for mitigations if, in fact, there are known impacts, but known impacts that are reflective of what your code then reflects, right? So if it were a conditional use permit, then you know, the reason for conditional use permits is that you want to be able to approve a project in a place, but you understand that there will probably be impacts to that project, mm-hmm. which is why it's a conditional right. use. You can deny that use, or you can actually revoke that conditional use permit if, in fact, it becomes... You're not able to mitigate, but I'm really saying that to the public.
I understand that, but on the other hand, I know that we would have got a crosswalk on the most east entrance into Safeway. I know we would have got a lot of heavy planting around that preschool. I know we would have had other ADA mitigations, because I was talking with them. And I was presenting this to Safeway, and they were willing to go in that direction, but the council did not go in that direction. And
well,
I guarantee, why would they still be willing to do that?
Create a lot of goodwill.
Because the city council didn't ask for anything, and one person asked, right. and so it was really up to the government body to say, hey, we would really like these items. We really feel as though this, and give a reason why,
yeah.
and they would have done it. It's just like, I mean, would you say something? Well, I want to go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and do this, even though I don't have to, and it's going to cost me.
I might in this case simply because of the ill will. Yeah, because they got slammed pretty hard by
yeah.
that editorial. Apparently, they won an award in the Argus Courier about them not being good neighbors. I will disagree with a lot of what people are saying
because it really I had to work with Deer Creek,
right?
And so I worked with them, and we got a lit crosswalk outside the scope of the project.
Sure.
There were things that we actually two in two different directions.
Of course, there was an EIR requirement,
but there
was kind of a different.
Well, no, they didn't have to do any of this. This was outside the scope of the EIR.
Deer Creek had to do an EIR, though.
Yes, but they did not have to do the fencing.
Sure.
They didn't have to do the
conditions of approval.
That's right. They did not have to do that, and they decided to work together.
Yeah.
I was actually trying to get people to work together and say, what mitigations are necessary? What do you feel would make this project better? Even if they feel like it's not going to.
Yeah.
Get what you can,
yeah.
and you need to work together. It's not blaming one or the other.
Sure. But nothing's stopping Safeway from doing that now.
I think what was stopped was probably six or seven meetings,
mm-hmm.
and the hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees could have really gone into mitigation.
Well, we'll see.
So
people are talking
about
boycotts now. I mean, there's a lot of bad feeling out there. Maybe that'll go away. Maybe it'll fester. Maybe it could be assuaged a little bit if Safeway did something good for the community.
It's interesting. If you look at their site,
mm-hmm.
the first night after this, there has been 25 shares, and I can't believe how many, I have never seen something like this, how many people have really commented on the site. I'm not tech
Sorry,
savvy.
Sorry, on what site? What are you
on
doing?
The Safeway
oh.
site.
Oh.
I am not tech savvy,
mm-hmm.
but I could realize 25 shares. Wouldn't we like 25 shares on our, you know, Inside Petaluma Face site? That's a lot. That is going to a lot of different people. And if you read the people's comments, you can see that Petaluma is a very divided community.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this was a pure legal issue. That's all it was, purely legal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we do have a divided community.
Which
That's
gets
it.
Us back to changing the
to
law.
Goals to make it exactly.
So we can prevent these from the future. So you said
That's
no.
Right.
You said no gas stations going forward. I don't think you were saying shut the existing ones down.
No, absolutely
but
not.
Just to clarify that, because in your comment
yes.
you just said no more gas stations.
Yeah, and I made that very clear when I was running and posted that on my website
yeah.
again, so that I wouldn't be seeming biased against
sure.
any project that was in the pipeline. And so I did clearly state that I will advocate for having no more fossil fuel stations being built in our city. I, you know, again, it's not the direction that, as I said, it's so yesterday.
I think if anything, I think you're going to see stations will close down, and then we're going to end up seeing like where the Sleep City is. Sleep City is.
Yeah.
That was a gas station,
yeah.
and the Salke, the owner, who worked with No Gas here, he owned that site,
mm.
and he owns the gas station across the street. What he will end up doing is building facilities like where the Starbucks is. Mm. So I'm hoping actually up and down Washington Street and other areas, we're going to get some really cool development on these sites instead of gas stations.
Well, and my vision, which I'll express tomorrow, so thank you for having me thinking about it today, is that, you know, again, we expand our downtown on our boulevards, Washington Boulevard up to the fairgrounds, and also along Petaluma Boulevard, and that we take all those vehicle-oriented uses that we have along our major corridor, and that we do promote redevelopment of those in a more walkable urban, sort of new urbanism friendly environment, and then look at how they back up to the Payrand district and Midtown and the single family homes, and see where we can get some more density. And obviously, you know, we have our transit station. I think there are, again, a lot of opportunities to envision how this might happen, and, you know, is it a specific plan that we move forward with? But I think all of it's going to take a lot of involvement and contribution from all of us to make this happen.
I think it will happen. Yeah. I really do. Because we've already seen it happen. But I just want to bring up something about the CASA agreement, since you brought up the fairgrounds. And, you know, concern with the CASA agreement, which is a joint, well, it's a statewide contract, kind of. Well, it's statewide legislation to determine development within communities around transit sites. And it's, you know, within a mile or a half a mile. And, of course, it's fluid, but it's still the legislation, you know, going through legislation right now, language. My concern is I want to make sure the city has a say with the fairgrounds, because that is city-owned. It's within the sphere of influence of CASA, and I really want to make sure that our city can make those decisions and not at the state level dictating what we can and can't do with that land particularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just for clarification, the CASA compact, which interesting. It's a document that came out, I think, in January, and it was the result of 50 different stakeholders getting together with something like 30 different experts, and they spent like at least 9 months creating this plan, and it was really designed to address our housing crises in this state, particularly in the Bay Area, and it was focused on the Bay Area, and the contribution and the results that are in the CASA compact are, you know, how do we prevent people from losing their homes? How do we produce more housing? There are three P's, and so there's a third P. And it's getting a lot of pushback. You know, other councils in Sonoma County have taken a look at it and taken positions, and typically negative positions. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that it really, and so in order to implement many of the recommendations, you're right, Janice, that it has to happen at a state level. And so there are 200 different bills right now going through the legislature that address both housing and transportation. And fortunately, the bills apparently are looking at these issues on a statewide, whereas the CASA compact was really looking at it in the Bay Area. And,
exactly.
You know, we are so diverse in when you look at the Bay Area, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of difference between San Jose and Petaluma and Oakland.
But there's also an oversight of money in each, like the Bay Area would have a group that I can't think of what it's called, but they would be overviewing the money, the tax that goes into there, because we'd all be taxed and there'd be other funds going into this, like a joint venture group. I would think that the Los Angeles would have their own, as the Valley would have their own, Modesto in that area. But some of the concern that I'm hearing from some people in Sonoma County is, why can't Sonoma County just have their own mm-hmm. pot of money? Instead, 25% of the money goes toward management of this organization that's going to be created. And that is the concern for some people that I've talked to. But the other thing I was talking to somebody about is, this person was saying, well, we have enough housing in this area. If you really look at the Airbnbs and then you start counting housing that people have decided not to have as rentals, I think what we need to go back to is the fact when the SMART train was approved, what people didn't realize is they approved development. Because you cannot have transportation like the SMART train without massive development to fund it. And that's what I think people are missing.
Well, I think what you need when you have a train like the SMART train and you to increase ridership, you need a density.
That's right.
And
that's right.
That is something that we don't have
that's
in our
right.
city. We don't have that core density, which is why I would like to see us expand our downtown and really create that. That is where we should be creating our density. And apparently, you know, we have created 8 new jobs and only have 1 new housing unit for those 8 jobs on average. And so, you know, I think that's why people like me spend half of my income on rent.
Only half?
Although, yeah, only half. But, you know, I choose to live in a small single-family home, you know, on the west side of town, and I'm very fortunate that my landlord hasn't increased the rent to the...
That's significant.
...to the $1,000 more than he could be getting.
Right.
So I am incredibly grateful and fortunate and realize that, so...
You know, it's interesting. I mean, for 20 years we've been talking about high density around the rail.
Yeah.
It's like 20 years later, we are still talking about high density around the rail. I think we're getting a little bit closer.
Yeah, and then you look at Brody Ranch.
Well, and then you look at Brody Ranch, and then you're going, we just went completely backwards by high density single family homes when you could have had double or triple the amount of people living there and access to a rail site.
Yeah.
And we don't even know if we're going to have that rail site.
There was an article about all of these new millionaires that are popping up in the Bay Area as a result of IPOs happening. And most of them, it seems, want those types of homes, unfortunately.
Exactly.
And so if you're a developer and you know that you can make more money doing that, unless there's... you know, regulations or incentives in place, it's hard to keep them from wanting to do that. If the market is saying, you know, pricing for homes are so high, people in this area at a certain point aren't buying them anymore, who is buying them?
Well, it's kind of the same as cheap gas. People want that too. I mean, you know, it's interesting what people want. And do we really know what people want? And how do you actually change that appetite for big and cheap? It's hard.
Well, I think a lot of that's going to be teased out tomorrow. Okay, and I just want to let people know if you're just tuning in, we're inside Petaluma, and our guest today, Delinda Fisher, is here. She's with the Petaluma City Council, and we keep talking about this event tomorrow. Could we kind of like describe what this event is for the purpose of those who don't know what we're talking about?
Thank you for that. So tomorrow, the City Council will be having a study session, and this typically happens every 2 years. You know, every 2 years we have 3 people that are up for re-election or election in the City Council, and so every 2 years, as I understand it, we all then sit down and say, okay, well, what are our goals over the next 2 years? And with our new city manager, Peggy Flynn, the reason why we haven't done this, even though Kevin and I, both new council members, got seated in January, is because we did not have a city manager and didn't have a leader in City Hall. And so we have waited and allowed Peggy time to kind of get up to speed before this happens. And I'm really excited about tomorrow. So Lucchese Center is where we will be meeting, in the big room on the left-hand side when you walk in. Again, if you want to get there early at 8 o'clock, there will be a rally outside with all the climate activists in town. And so we're starting at 9 a.m. At 8:45, we'll have coffee and snacks for everybody. So we're hoping to get there a little bit early and get situated. There are apparently at least 79 people, last I looked, that had RSVP'd. So Peggy has done, and the city staff has done a fabulous job of making this public, getting the information out. We on Petaluma Star, the website, they asked people to RSVP, so we would know anticipate how many people were coming. I finally got it out to my email list this week. and got a lot of great feedback. And so tomorrow we're meeting from 9 to 4. So if you can spend all day with us, we would really like that. We'll feed you lunch.
What's going to happen
and
in this
on the agenda? Yeah. So I didn't actually bring the agenda before me. But there's going to be introduction by Mayor Teresa Barrett and then sort of context setting by Peggy. And then we're going to talk about the goals and objectives from 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Talk about sort of where those stand and what progress has been made, and kind of celebrate sort of where we are today. And then we're going to have an opportunity for public comment. Mm-hmm. There's two opportunities, 30-minute segments that we have both in the morning and the afternoon. But the most exciting part of the day, I think, is that we're going to self-facilitate around tables, I think, of 10 people, where we have two staff members, one person taking notes.
Oh, great.
And a council member. And then we're going to address one of the primary goals that we all bring up in the beginning, earlier in the morning. And so we can have a real round table discussion about that goal and what we want to see and dive into the details and get all the perspectives about that. And then we'll be presenting, one person from each group will then present that to everybody so that we know what happened at the other tables that we were not at. I'm not quite sure. Then we'll probably break for lunch. And
so the public brings their wish lists.
I have the agenda right in front of me. There you go, my dear. We have actually two public comments.
Uh-huh.
One of them starts at 9:50, and the second public comment is in the afternoon at 2. And so it's basically an open and overview, introductions and comments, updates and review, public comment, goal setting discussion, a break. Outcomes, breakout discussions, that's what you were just talking about, reports from breakout discussions, working lunch, and then back at 2 with public comment, prioritizing discussion and exercise conclusion, the next step, city manager Peggy Flynn, and then at 4 o'clock you adjourn. That's a quick synopsis.
Yeah.
Your day
yes.
Tomorrow.
So as I was saying, so after these tabletop sessions and discussions, we'll again report back on those. Take a break for lunch, a working lunch. So again, we'll feed the public as well, and then another opportunity for public comment. And then, unfortunately, that's usually in nap time, so we'll have to figure out a way to get energized again and get our brains working and then figure out what the next steps are. And this is not the final say. You know, at 4 o'clock tomorrow, it doesn't shut down, right?
It's just the beginning of what I see.
Exactly.
That's what I was
going
to ask. Exactly. I mean, if people can't attend this, will there be a survey to rate some of the things that come out of this? Would be some additional
There is actually a survey that the city did, and the public can go on this the city's website and go under meetings, and then you can actually get this 41-page document for tomorrow's meeting, so people can actually read about what the process is, what council members' comments are, what a few members of the public's comments are. And so it's a good place to start. So just go on the city's website.
But I mean, after the fact, I imagine.
No, I understand that. But I mean, this just gives a framework for people who've never really been to one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a survey now at Petaluma Star. And again, a number of people have taken it, and we've gotten the results of that. And, you know, it was a limited short survey. Mm-hmm. But
did you get much response? Did you get good response on that?
We did.
I've got it right here.
We did. Absolutely.
And will this be videoed?
It will be videoed, so if you cannot be there tomorrow, you can watch it in the privacy of your own home, and we'll get that up on the same website. There's a spot for it.
PCA right. Doing that?
Absolutely. Oh.
I don't think so.
I would think they would.
We'll find out.
I don't know that
it's a city hall meeting.
PCA to do it, but...
Oh, well, we'll find out, won't we?
Does it come under the general responsibility of... I mean, I know there's a contract for PCA to film all the meetings.
This is considered a meeting, so
I'm
not sure.
We got to talk to Dawn.
Yeah. Well, either way, regardless of who's doing it, it will, in fact, happen, and it will go up on the website. And
Perfect. And
so it's my understanding is that, you know, after tomorrow, the city staff will take a look at all the information and collate it, and we take it out to our committees and our commissions,
right?
So
exactly.
That we get further feedback So yes, this is an evolving process and ongoing, and so tomorrow is not the end of the discussion, and again, I hope just the beginning of the discussion in really deciding how we move forward.
And for the public, the survey is actually part of this 41-page that they can pull up on the city's website, and it was really interesting actually looking at it, and looking at all the questions, looking at what percentages of positives and negatives. And
do you want to talk about the results of it a little bit?
You know what? I no.
Okay.
And the only reason is
she does.
Well, no, you can, because I don't feel like I know enough about it. I reviewed it last night, and I don't feel confident enough to do that. But okay. I'm more than happy to have you do it if you'd like to.
Well, when I looked at it, I was just looking at sort of what were the top three issues, because people were asked.
Community was very high. Yes, exactly. Yeah. The downtown is very high. Our business community was very low, which I thought was pretty interesting. Is not a real top priority.
Traffic was a high priority.
Traffic is a high priority. Growth is a high priority. Streets, crime, affordability, community engagement wasn't really high. The economy wasn't high. Leadership was not really high, and schools were not high on the
list. Well, when
you
can only choose three, I would tend to agree that affordable housing and traffic are probably.
That's
what I learned.
Going also on this, and it tells me that people are concerned about safety, which is something that we're talking about because of the economy and how do we really, as a city, pay our bills as pension costs are going up. You have to balance all this out, but I thought it was interesting that safety was a high priority.
Mm-hmm. So taxes is probably going to be something there in the goal setting, I would imagine.
It's some sort of revenue measure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. If anyone had been to the budget review that we had recently, you'll see that in 2 years we don't have any funds left to pay our bills, so we'll need to modify either the resources coming in or the output, and I don't know that anybody wants to continue to...
You're running pretty lean already as a city.
Yes, we are.
But I do want to say one other thing. A walkable city was really important. Mm-hmm. And when Deer Creek was built, my neighborhood, you never saw people walking. Mm-hmm. And now since Deer Creek is there, it's not just Deer Creek, it's really the dog park has really brought people out walking. And, people are using Lynch Creek Trail. There looks like there's going to be a new trail with South Point. And so there's all kinds of good walkability. And when you give the public something that they really like a dog park, people get together. And I'm stunned at how many people come from outside our city to this particular dog park because it works in their if somebody's an electrician, they go and they do their work and they take their dog with them. And then he goes to the dog park here because he really likes the Deer Creek Dog Park. Yeah. And so it's not just Petaluma people, but it really goes to show how many people come to our community and enjoy amenities like that. And walking is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned the trail, South Point, and on the bicycle.
Which I just heard about.
The Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee this week. Oh, yes, it's been a long week. We did look at the plans for the required smart station multi-use path that was next to it, and it has been funded from Payran to South Point, right? So that is going to be going out to bid, and I think being built out in the next 2 years. So it's a great asset.
And I just checked. I was going to say I checked with our access coordinator Patty, and she says PCA is taping the event tomorrow, so it will be visible on probably Channel 20.
Oh, so it'll be live?
I imagine.
Or no, it won't be live.
It'll be aired on probably Channel 20.
It'll be live if you're there.
Well, someone could do a live Facebook thing or something if you've got Wi-Fi.
Hey, we're going to run out of time if we keep going with this subject here, because I want to bring up the fact that Monday night you're having another get together to discuss the living wage. I looked for an agenda for that, but I didn't.
It just came out. I got it delivered last night, so
okay.
I think you might see it.
I looked yesterday.
It probably is up now. So, yes, we're having a special session on Monday evening. Not sure what time we start.
And that'll be at the City Council Chambers.
City Council Chambers, yes. Presentation on Yeah, a living wage. I'm not sure it's really a living wage. talking about having a minimum wage of $15 an hour.
Better than what we have, but still not living in this community.
Exactly. Yes. Right.
I'm sorry. I came from the Living Wage Coalition. Marty Bennett and I put that together.
Thank you so much for that.
In 2000.
That's exactly right.
So that just was normally falls out of my mouth as living wage.
Well,
so
it probably was back then.
That was my focus, yeah, but living wage.
So it's at 6 p.m.
to minimum wage.
It's at 6 p.m. on April 8th, so Monday, 6 p.m. City Hall.
So on the subject of increasing revenues, something that we've talked about a little bit is the idea of dispensaries in town. I mean, we just approved a gas station. Why not a dispensary?
I don't know that we should be looking at dispensaries as a way to increase revenue. I am supportive of having dispensaries in town. And I'm not sure that, like Cotati, that they should be taxed in addition. Why would cannabis be taxed any more than alcohol other uses? I think that's a little bit predatory. So,
well, we can choose what the tax is here.
Right.
We can decide. I mean, that
we can, but again, you know, why is cannabis being, what would be the justification for taxing cannabis more than we tax other things?
So cities can make more money.
Yeah, but, you know, I do it on alcohol. Do it across the board.
But I'm saying we're talking about just different ways to get revenue, and obviously we want to leave no stone unturned. And that's a big one. We've got a large community here. Legalization of marijuana, I think, was over 60% support. I think it was even higher than that in Petaluma. We have about 60,000 people. I don't know how much revenue we're losing, but I know right now that, you know, people have to go to Cotati or Sebastopol or Santa Rosa for that.
It is a lost revenue stream. I do believe that. But at the supervisors this week, and I'm not exactly sure of the language and what exactly happened, but they were talking about hemp.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a vote, it was a majority vote opposing hemp, but Rabbit, our supervisor, actually supported it. Mm-hmm. And this is a federal issue.
Yeah.
And for the
farm bill included legalizing hemp.
Exactly.
Non-THC.
Yes.
And I
want to give him kudos. David Rabbit for voting correctly on that, because this is a federal issue, and I think it is probably lobbying by the marijuana groups is why the other supervisors voted the opposite. And David and I don't always agree on things, but this is one thing he definitely deserves the kudos, because it's federal. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of say in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that he made the right move in this one.
Well, the problem also, as I see dispensaries, and Teresa Barrett actually made this point, is that the county allows them right up to Petaluma. So we could be in a situation where we have dispensaries just outside of town.
Well, we could have one right there on the boulevard.
Where we get no revenue from it and have no control over it. No, I'm just saying.
I mean, that's the county right there on the boulevard.
There's parts where it's all of a sudden it's county.
Yeah.
Next door is county.
We wouldn't get the tax revenue from it is the problem.
Correct.
Can I bring up something? Of course I can.
Okay. We have about five minutes.
It's in the Press Democrat today, and it's called Finding Peace at Life's End. And I think it's a really important article for people to read. We had Dennis Posake a few weeks ago, and we talked about, you know, the right to die. And for
death with dignity.
And for people to be able to make this choice. And this man is 87 years old. He was an activist in our community. He and his wife are near and dear to my heart, and they've been arrested for believing in what they believed in. They have a fabulous family that is pulled together for his choice. He broke a hip. I mean, his quality of life is not what he wants. He's very clear on the decision. And I talked with his daughter this morning before the show. And it was, you know, we just kind of supported each other in what happens at the end of life with our parents and how decisions that we have to make. as adults, and we're now the next generation. But the difficulty is they've gotten a few calls from people saying this is not God's will and interfering in his right to have the dignity to make the end-of-life choice. Monday he may decide not to do it. We don't know. But these people were pillars of our community on the total progressive side. Mm-hmm. And I just think that people need to support people, decisions that they make. And I want to just say that I think it was an interesting article, and knowing the person makes it even more interesting because we're next, our generation.
Yep.
And, you know, and Cindy, you know what it's like with a spouse with dementia, and he really can't make that decision.
No.
But this man is making his own decision at 87. So now the family's getting together, and that's what's going to happen. And it just gives me chills, but I think it's so important to talk about this.
And well, it's important to talk about it because it's what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
And right now it's shocking to people, and people can't accept it because there hasn't been enough of these cases happening that people can embrace it.
Yeah.
They can't, you know, you've got to... You have to be in somebody's shoes to fully understand, and to criticize is really an awful thing.
It is, and the family's a fabulous family, and he is just the luckiest person, and they are so lucky to have them as parents. And I'm not saying their name on purpose.
I don't understand the criticism.
Well, I don't understand it either.
It's not their business.
Yeah.
No,
and so, and then there was something else that I thought was interesting in the paper about LGBTT with the Mormons. They're actually letting same-sex parents, the children can be baptized. Mm. And, I mean, things are changing in our world.
They're running out of members, probably.
Well, that might be it, too. But I thought it was kind of interesting. And, you know, but I just think it's really a changing of times, and people accept people for who they are, so not what we want people to be.
What do we got? How many minutes left?
We've got a couple of minutes. And first, I want to thank Delinda for being here.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. And do come back again and again.
And thank you for running for city council.
Yeah.
Really appreciate
it. And for winning.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Okay, I want to mention something. KPCA, which is what you're listening to right now, Petaluma's homegrown radio station, is having a fundraiser on Monday, May 20th at the Lagunitas Brewing Company, and I'd like to invite you to please attend. We need funds to keep running, and so you can keep listening to our fun show. And so the tickets for this event, $20 in advance for adults and $25 at the door. Kids in advance are $10 and $15 at the door. You can go to kpca.fm and get your tickets there. We don't have actual hard copy tickets available yet at the Petaluma Mail Depot, but we will. So check in with Mo. We should get them there soon. I don't know when, but they will be available at the Mail Depot. We're going to have entertainment there. DJ Saeed is going to spin some records at the beginning, and then The Grain is going to entertain us with their really cool music. So,
nice.
You guys, are you familiar with The Grain?
I am not.
Well, you need to go.
What kind of music? Do we know?
My kind of music.
Oh, oh jam.
Jam and some cover.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Dead songs?
They've done some dead songs.
Any Arlo in there?
Yeah,
since he's my new best friend.
New hero,
Buddy Floyd.
Well, so why don't you just go there on Monday, May 20th and check it out.
Sounds like a great
event. And it's kinda, that price also includes dinner, which is catered by Signor Sis.
And I'm going to be one of the servers, I think.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, you are.
Such a
deal.
And
that's 5:30 to 8:30 at the Lagunitas Brewing Company. Mark your calendar.
I mean, you could spend that much just for a mediocre dinner.
somewhere.
That is very true.
This is, you know, you're supporting
like
the community.
As long as you bring your takeout container.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yes, we didn't get to that point, but
no.
Yeah. No,
no. No more single-use plastics.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. And
eliminate styrofoam, single-use.
We are using compostable products at this event. So
oh, good.
Yeah. We're doing the right thing.
We could encourage people to bring their own.
Their own container.
You should try to ride share.
You're
pressing your luck on that one.
You can do that anywhere. You can do that anywhere in town. We were talking about that earlier about bringing your own containers when you go to a restaurant.
Yeah.
So
well, when I go to my Japanese restaurant and do takeout, I'm going to be bringing my own containers now.
Which Japanese restaurant?
The one on by Kmart. And I can't think of the name, but we've been going there for 20 years since our granddaughter, who's 15 now.
Oh, is it Fuji?
It's Fuji. Yeah. And she loved Fuji. And she would go in there and just, you know, a year old and 2 years just eat sushi.
It's an unintentional plug.
I know.
It's
but
just reported.
But they're super nice people, but they use styrofoam.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that is my...
Okay.
Well, yes.
This is a whole other show.
Exactly.
I look forward to that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. My zero waste committee.
Exactly. We can have you on again.
It gets a Naomi on. That would be great.
So if you want to hear a repeat of this show, because it was so much fun, or hear any of our past shows, go to InsidePetaluma.com, and everything is there for you. We have other cool things to look at there, so go check it out. Oh, and our Facebook page, KPCA Inside Petaluma.
And there are links to all those from InsidePetaluma.com, so it's pretty easy.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you again, Belinda.
Thank you.
And I won't be here with you guys last weekend.
No.
I mean, next week I will be in
Hawaii. Jason sits in the helm, and I'm going to sit right here.
All right. Well, you guys have a good show, and I'll see you. I'll see you on the other side.
Okay.
Have a good week.
You too. Enjoy. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.
KPCA LP, Petaluma, California.